More now from WBUR's Boston Underwater series. And today we are going underground into the sewers, more specifically, because while Boston is an old city, part of the reason we love it, when it comes to its sewers, age can be a problem. Of the 666 miles of stormwater pipes running underneath the city, nearly half were built during the 1930s or earlier, and at least 120 miles predate World War I. Now, these pipes are actually structurally sound, but simply put, the system was not built to drain this Boston. It was built to drain a very different Boston, one with a lot less water than today's city and landscape are going to produce due to climate change, or at least are likely to produce. WBUR environmental reporter Miriam Wassum has gone deep into the topic of Boston's sewage and stormwater systems and their vulnerability to climate change. I think this is going to be so much fun to talk about. Miriam, welcome back to the show.
Oh, Tiziana, I could talk about this all day. I am thrilled to be here.
I know. Let's just get our sewer geeks on, Miriam. I'm really excited.
Let's do it.
Okay, because as it turns out, so this Boston Underwater series, it's about climate change. Mm-hmm. It's about sea level rise. And it turns out that sewers and stormwater really matter. So tell us why.
Sure. So I just want to start off by saying that the sewer system, we're talking about both stormwater and wastewater systems. These are central to making our modern society work. And the wastewater system, so like the water that disappears when you flush your toilet, is pretty safe from climate change. What we're going to talk about is the stormwater system. So that's the water that falls on your streets and houses and flows into catch basins, which are those metal grates on the side of the road. From there, it goes through underground pipes to an outfall where it's deposited into Boston Harbor or one of its tributaries. So what does this have to do with climate change? A couple things. First, as you alluded to in the opening, we're going to get some really severe storms in the future because of climate change, and they're going to drop a ton of rain in a really short period of time. And our pipes were designed to handle a certain amount of water, approximately 5 inches in 24 hours. If that capacity is exceeded, things just start to back up. So one of the experts I talked to for this story, UMass Boston professor Ellen Douglas, put it to me this way. She said, imagine that the stormwater system is like a funnel that you're holding under the faucet.
And as long as the flow coming out of the faucet is not greater than the flow that can come out of the end of the funnel, everything will be fine. But if you increase the amount of water coming out of that faucet, eventually you're going to have water overflowing the funnel. That's exactly what happens in a storm drain system.
So climate change is kind of like turning up the water pressure on that funnel or on the sink.
Okay, so to a couple of things you said there. First, the sewer and the stormwater systems, we're talking about stormwater here. They are, as I understand it, somewhat, is interdependent the right word?
Yes and no. It kind of, I don't want to get like too into the weeds here. In most of the city, they are separate systems. So they are separate pipes going, they're actually probably controlled by different agencies. The MWRA handles most of the wastewater. Okay. They are separate. There are a couple exceptions where they are combined, but all of that water is going to a treatment plant anyways. So when we're talking about the stormwater system backing up, we're not talking about sewage. We're talking about, there could be other gross things in there, but.
And how old is our system, like the underground network, et cetera, for stormwater drainage?
So that actually goes back to, well, it depends on where you start. But as I wrote in one of my pieces, the stormwater system in Boston is actually older than the city itself. So, when European colonists first settled the area in the 1600s, they very quickly realized that when it rains, the clay-rich soil of Boston doesn't absorb water very well, and it just created like a lot of mud. So people got creative and started creating underground channels to direct stormwater to the harbor. And by underground channels, I mean that people were just like literally digging up the public streets and making these brick-lined channels to the harbor. And over time, it got chaotic. And then it got gross because people started connecting their backyard privies or outhouses to the system. And this meant that sewage was just deposited all over tidal flats in the city. And, you know, I quote a city report from the 1870s that said, the problem of bad odors was so bad it could arouse the sleeping, terrify the weak, and nauseate and exasperate everyone.
Yes. So, and that article, it's a hoot. It's actually worth reading. But you're reassuring us that that's not where we are today, right? So now we've got this durable system. But as you say, we've got this problem of this funnel, right? More water than the funnel of the system might be able to handle. So what are the specific threats now? I mean, how does this manifest? What are planners in Boston worried about?
Yeah. And I should also add that, you know, so the turning up the pressure on the water is one thing. There's another part of that too, and that's that it has to do with storm surge and sea level rise. So just quickly, if you picture the outfall of the pipe, sort of the end of that funnel draining into Boston Harbor, if it's low tide and the water level in the harbor is below the pipe, things can flow out easily. But if the water level is higher from either sea level rise or storm surge, it's going to block that pipe, which makes it harder, if not impossible, for stormwater to drain. And in some scenarios, you might actually get water backflowing into the system. So that's sort of the second side of the pipe problem.
Got it.
But in terms of what the city is worried about, I mean, road flooding is a really big one. We already see major transportation routes like Morrissey Boulevard that get shut down for flooding. And street closures are frustrating and have an economic cost, but they can also be a really big public safety threat because, you know, if first responders can't get to someone, we could be talking about a life and death situation here.
All right. So we have both the obvious environmental problems. We have that problem of public safety. Who is in charge now of trying to fix this?
Yeah. So after Hurricane Harvey in 2017, the city of Boston, they, you know, sort of a wake up call. They were like, oh my goodness, extreme flooding. What are we going to do? And you have Climate Ready Boston that's handling a lot of the stuff dealing with how we're going to keep sea level rise and storm surge out of the system. And on the flip side, you have the Boston Water and Sewer Commission working on figuring out how we can make sure that stormwater can drain at the same time. So those two city agencies are the ones really handling this.
Okay, and just a reminder for listeners, Hurricane Harvey was over 60 inches of rain in a short time in Houston in 2014. Is that right?
Yes. Did I say 2017?
Okay. No. I'm just making sure that we've got it right. Okay, so now, sit tight, Miriam, because I'm going to add another voice. I've got Sanjay Sate here, who is the climate resilient climate resilience program manager for the city of Boston. Sanjay, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So it's great to have you. You've heard Miriam and I talk this through. Miriam's kind of educating me as we go along. Anything else we need to understand about the problem?
I mean, it's a big problem, and thankfully, we've been doing a lot to get our hands around it. So, you know, Miriam's pieces have been great at really providing a lot of context to readers to understand how interconnected the system is. You can't just think about rain. You can't just think about wastewater. You can't just think about sea level rise. They all kind of have to come together in an integrated manner. So that's what the work we do. It is fun work, and it's also very challenging work. So no, I think you have it exactly right. And Miriam, you've been doing a great job with these pieces. Also digging into history. I loved reading the pieces about the history of Boston's sewage system.
Thank you.
And there, you can find that story at WBUR.org, listeners, and there's some fantastic pictures from the construction of these systems in that story, too. Sanjay, so I'm imagining what it would take just to deal with pipes under my house, right? And now we're talking about a city. How do we get ready for increased rainfall, rising sea levels, other effects of climate change in this kind of infrastructure? And what are we doing right now?
Yeah, so, I mean, how do we deal with it? I think, you know, the way that you deal with the funnel problem is you deal with both sides of the funnel, like Miriam was saying. So there's a range of things you can do to limit the impact that a lot of rain has. And cities like Houston are really trying to double down on this because they realize that if they don't figure out stormwater, they're going to have many more floods to come. So, you know, there are solutions like storage. You can store the water on a site underneath a building. You can slow down the water, and you can reduce the amount of water you put into the system at any given time. Like Miriam said, you know, when we're talking about 5 1/4 inches over a 24-hour period, if you store the water, that's effectively like reducing the amount of water that needs to go into the system. So you're slowing it down. And that's a really good method to protect folks without coming up with very complex engineering solutions.
Okay. So I also know, Sanjay, that you've said that those who are already vulnerable in Boston are even more vulnerable to stormwater flooding. There's an equity and justice issue to this and dimension to this too. Talk a little bit more about that. Who's most at risk and why?
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up. I mean, you know, the city of Boston is going to be judged not just on how we protect or not just on, you know, reducing emissions or making sure that we're resilient, but on how we do it. And we have a lot of lessons we can pull from, both from our own history and from the history of other major changes in American cities, where we might not have lived up to our highest aspirations. And we see that in who has tree cover and how they experience heat. We see that in who has facilities sited next to them that pollute their air. This is a story that's been around for a long time. And when we talk about climate change, we have an opportunity to not make those same mistakes. And we have an opportunity to also correct some of those mistakes. And I think when we think about who's most impacted by climate change, it's not just about where the water goes or where the heat is, but it's about the person. And putting the person at the center of the climate crisis really helps you understand what we can do today and what we can do now to make sure that folks are protected. So, you know, when I talk about putting a person at the center, it's really about understanding what can any person do when they have an impact, like a flood or a heat wave, to protect themselves and their families, or how sensitive are they to it, rather than just, do they live in a hot building? And I think that's the direction that good climate work is going in the United States, and Boston is doing that work.
Before I turn back to Miriam, you said there are also opportunities here to correct some of those mistakes. Give one example.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so currently the city of Boston is undertaking an analysis of all of the heat impacts that we experience both today and in the future. And what we know about that is those heat impacts, meaning who experiences the worst of a heat wave and lives in a really hot neighborhood, that tends to coincide with neighborhoods that were redlined in the past. And redlining just means when financial institutions wouldn't lend to residents and public sector folks wouldn't invest in neighborhoods that had specific racial or ethnic compositions. And so when you think about correcting the wrongs, it's about understanding who's disproportionately affected by climate change and how do we ensure that, you know, no one bears more of their fair share of all of these impacts that we're going to have to be adjusting with and adapting to over the coming years.
And Sanjay, briefly, is there anything individuals can do, or is this really a systems level issue?
There's so much that individuals can do to protect themselves and their families and be a part of the solution here. When we think about heat and stormwater, there are so many opportunities to do something on your own property, or even if you're a renter, to do things that can help cool down your building, your community, and your neighborhood. You can look at things like painting things with a more reflective coating. A lot of roofs in Chinatown, for instance, are very dark and they absorb a lot of heat. So there's things from paint to screens to shading to rain barrels and French drains, and there's all these things that you could pull off a shelf today. You could go to Home Depot today and you could figure out how you could have an impact. And we want to make sure that folks understand that it's not just up to the city. It's not just up to the property owner on the waterfront. It's really up to all of us to make this work.
All right, Miriam, back to you now. What are you going to watch for next?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all watching to see what the city does. And jumping off of what Sanjay was saying, you know, one of the solutions is to create more green spaces, because that absorbs rainwater and street trees and all sorts of plants that can reduce the amount of rainwater flowing into the system really quickly. But on the flip side of that, there are some places that are going to need engineering solutions. And so we'll be watching, you know, the city of Boston is currently undertaking a process to assess the vulnerability of its 208 storm water outfalls and then trying to figure out solutions. So they're really ahead of the curve nationally on this.
We will keep watching with you. WBUR environmental reporter Miriam Wasser and Sanjay Sait, Climate Resilience Program Manager for the City of Boston. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.